How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. What's going on? You're in New York City, or where are you at these days?
I am in New York City, where I was born and raised, Queens, New York. I am a product of Far Rockaway, and I'm happy to say that, you know, I don't live there anymore.
All right, so PM Don was originally formed back in 1988 by the man, the myth, the legend, Prince B. Before we talk about the formation of PM Don, let's talk about you and B's relationship, because you guys are obviously cousins. Were you guys pretty close growing up?
As a matter of fact, we were. He's 2 years older than me, and I first became aware of him when he was four and I was two. His mother is my aunt, and my father is his uncle. His mom is the oldest child of my grandmother, and my father is the third oldest, but the oldest boy of all 10 children. So.
Now, Prince B's stepdad was George Brown, who was obviously one of the founding members of Kool & the Gang. How big of an impact did Brown have in the formation of PM Don and on B in particular?
It's hard for me to answer that because, you know, me personally, I would say that, you know, there wasn't really an impact as far as, like, the formation. That was mostly B himself. But the musical influences came from he and an uncle of mine, my Uncle Timothy, who was a garbage man and used to bring home records and anything else that he thought was of value that he didn't see fit to throw away.
So Prince B began DJing in ninth grade and then worked after school as a security guard at a homeless shelter. He made the money, saved it towards studio time, and then by late 89, obviously that paid off. The first single was Ode to a Forgetful Mind. It was released by an indie label over here. It didn't do real well over here. But then G Street took it over to London, and PM Don became pretty well known over there. Then the only thing it was, kind of a curveball was thrown. Obviously, G Street was kind of going bankrupt at that time and sold its entire operation to Island Records, which took over PM Don. Do you think, in retrospect, was that a good thing for the band, a bad thing, or did it not really matter at all?
It was a good thing. I mean, it was a good thing in the long run. Everybody in... from every aspect of the PM Don situation could look back and say, oh, if I could go back in a time machine, I would do this differently. It just doesn't make sense. You know, it was a beautiful ride nonetheless. And to a certain extent, it still is.
So then after having success in the UK, Island released the first album over here of the Heart, of the Soul, and of the Cross. And the first single off of that was a smash all over the entire globe, Set Adrift on Memory Bliss. How would you describe that song?
I have my own vision of what I felt the song meant, but I just know that Prince B was a chubby fat kid who couldn't get a girl, and so he imagined how it would be if he had one, and he wrote a song about it, and I've heard him say this numerous times, but if you ask what my vision of what the song was or how I felt it hit me, it was basically, I just felt like it was a young kid in love with something or someone, and every time he seemed to, you know, for whatever reason, what he loved the most was taken away from him, and the only way he could cope with it was to memorize about it.
The second album was the Bliss album, and I think one of the best love songs of the 1990s, I Die Without You, definitely been many a wedding song throughout its time. Was there a particular girl about that song? Do you know much about the background of that song?
Sure I do. There was no girl in the mix. Basically, he was recruited by Eddie Murphy to write some songs for Eddie's album. And then in the mix of doing that, he came up with I'd Die Without You. And originally, he wrote it for Eddie to sing. And Eddie felt it was too good and that he had to do it. And that's when he brought it to the project, the Boomerang movie.
Looking Through Patient Eyes was also on that second album. That song, Looking Through Patient Eyes, is that simply about God, or is there more to it than that?
No, that's what it is. It's like, it's his way of asking God for forgiveness and patience while he tries to understand what he's supposed to do. And I always thought it was a cool song. It was one of my favorites, but some of my favorite songs on the Bliss album may not be the mainstream favorites. You know, a lot of people talk about I Die Without You. I Die Without You. I always thought that To Love Me More was the most wonderful slow song on the album.
Now, with PM Don and with hip-hop in general, obviously there's lots of sampling and stuff like that. I know obviously you know about this way more than I do, so I ask you, when you're writing a song and putting together a song, do you pick the sample before you write the lyrics, or how does that come together? Is there a vision involved?
It depends on the scenario. Sometimes you make the beat first. Sometimes the song just hits you in the head with a sledgehammer and says, "Hello, create me. I'm right here." So it goes either way.
We were talking to Doc G from PM Don. The third album was Jesus Wept. It brought us Downtown Venus. What's the story about that song?
I honestly think my cousin was on some LSD or something. No, I'm kidding. But no, all jokes aside, he was just a naturally trippy person. And, you know, he always says it about me, but I say it about him. We've always been naturally high people. And so we say weird things that nobody catches or understands, and that was just one of those things. And it's funny because in response to the question you answered prior, I truly believe that he heard the sample, and then he just ran with it and went crazy and wrote that song. But Jesus Wept was by far the best PM Dawn album ever created.
Really?
Yeah, in my opinion, it was our Midnight Marauder, if you know Tribe Called Quest.
Why do you say that? What did you like best about it?
Well, because it was like Tribe Called Quest. Midnight Marauder was the third album. I thought if The Source wasn't such a discriminative and idiotic publication, they would have named Jesus Wept a 5-mic album. The only thing that tarnished Jesus Wept was DJ Minute Mix's inappropriate behavior, which sabotaged ultimately the group and the record sales.
We're talking to Doc G from PM Dawn right now. Then the fourth album of the 90s was Dearest Christian. I had no right on it, Faith in You. I know the album was written in large part for B's kids and had a lot of very emotional writing. Do you think that's PM Dawn's most honest record of the 90s, that fourth one?
Yes, I do. I think it was his most honest because we were in a situation where we were creating songs using samples, and we were being ripped off by people. Faith in You originally had the sample for I'll Be Watching You by Sting, and we had people like Diddy and, you know, other people who were just cutting our throats, you know, basically just, you know, they were basically, you know, using their influence with the urban, you know, the more urban people in the genre. And they were swiping everything, you know. I mean, they had, you know, we weren't the guys popping bottles in the club and starting fights with Coast and everything. So we kind of got criticized for it. And, you know, we weren't, it's funny. It's like we always say we were sacrificial lambs. You know what I mean? The same way that, you know, Hammer danced around in the shiny suit. They criticized them for it, and then other people do it years later. It was one of those things. Everybody felt we were lazy because we would pick these dope songs, sample them, and then make something cool out of them. And then, you know, they just caught up with us, and they started writing things that weren't as deep as what we were doing, and, you know, they won with it. Same thing happened with Sometimes I Miss You on the third album. Originally, the sample was The Lady in My Life by Michael Jackson, and we got beat out for the LL Cool J. You know, he used it with Boyz II Men on the Hey Lover, Hey Lover. Doggy Dog World, man. What can I say?
We're talking to Doc G from PM Dawn. Now, that kind of goes along with my next question. It's my belief that PM Dawn, more than any other group or artist in the entire 90s, bridge the tensions and gap between white and black, hip-hop and pop, more than anybody else. Now, was that a goal of PM Dawn, or did it just kind of happen?
No, it wasn't a goal. All we wanted to do was make music that we thought was cool. That's it. You know, we made music that was cool to us. It was honest. It was personal feelings behind it. And, you know, each one of us was traumatized in some different way by one of our parents and everything. And so we had serious issues about, you know, all right, God, if you love me so much, why the hell did you let him get away with it? And, you know, so we tried to act things. We, you know, it was about building faith learning about faith and trying to increase whatever faith that we had.
I would say Prince B's all struck me as kind of a mysterious guy. You know, he's very deep and very just a wizard with words, just very amazing with words. What's he like when you get to know him? Because obviously you know him better than anybody. Is he mysterious? Yeah. Is he quiet?
Is he quiet?
Yeah, what's he like?
I wish he was quiet. No, he's not a quiet person at all. In fact, if you don't put Scotch tape over his mouth, he'll talk you to death for 48 hours.
Really?
I mean, you know. And same thing with me. I guess that's why it works so well with us. But he's actually a pretty cool dude. I mean, he's like a very mischievous and hilarious guy, just like myself. We constantly play Tom and Jerry tricks on each other, you know. I think of myself as Tom the cat, and he spikes the dog. So it's like I play a bunch of tricks on him, and then when he snaps, he grabs me by the neck and goes, "Listen, pussy cat. You're going to leave me alone now, or I'm going to stick my foot in your ass." So, you know, so it's one of those things. That's been our relationship ever since we were kids.
When you look back over the history of PM Don, what are you most proud of about the group?
I'm most proud of the group because they came from nothing and became something. And I'm also proud of the group because no matter what we did, what the mistakes were, whatever Prince B could have did or should have did, he did it his way with no regrets. I questioned a lot of decisions that he made. I always wanted to punch KRS-One in the face. And he made me swear never to put my hands on the guy for what he did to him. And he said it was important that we showed people that black people could get along in this business and not act like savages.
I know that in late 2009... Prince B suffered his second stroke and had part of his right leg amputated. How's he doing these days? Is he doing okay?
Well, actually, that was the third stroke.
Oh, the third one?
Yeah, it happened. It was 2005, 2008, and 2009.
Nice. How's he doing?
And, well, he's okay, but, you know, he's still messed up, and it's a long road. It's a long road, but he's prepared to travel down that road, and he's going to do whatever he has to do to get back on his feet so we can finish what we started. In the event that he fails, which I don't believe will happen, but if something like that were to happen and God called him up, I feel comfortable today knowing that he gave 110% to live.
I think that a lot of diehard PM Don fans know you guys have a lot of unreleased stuff in the vault. How many PM Don songs do you think there are that the public has never really heard before?
There's quite a few. And there's more in our head than there are on that are recorded. A lot of the stuff that's in the vault we can't get anymore because, you know, JC the Eternal, his brother Jarrett, broke into his house and stole his computer while he was in the hospital recovering from his leg amputation. And he's hiding the computer somewhere in Jersey City, and he's trying to dissect the stuff Prince B created and pan it like he created it himself. Very sad case. Very sad story for a person.
And I know you, Doc G, obviously. I've had the pleasure of seeing you a few times with PM Don. I know you're doing a lot of stuff now on yourself as well, and you're doing the PM Don stuff. Tell us more about you and what you got going on.
Well, here's what it is. I put my solo aspirations on hold in 2005 when B invited me to his house and said, "Hey, man, I need you for a photo shoot." I said, "What the hell for?" He said, "You didn't hear? You and me are the new PM Don." That's how he told me. You know, he didn't talk to me about it. He just invited me to his house one day, and when I walked in, there was a photo shoot going on. We did a tour, and then after that, he got sick. And what happened is, while we were touring, I would record songs because I realized that as cool as the PM Don catalog is, you need something to rock a crowd for a long period of time during a live show, especially if we're talking about an hour and 45 minutes. So I created some songs and I made classics, and it worked out. And then B told me, "You know what? You really should finish your solo album." Originally, he was supposed to produce it in its entirety, but when he got sick, that couldn't happen. I have a solo album that I finished called The Prescription, and it will not be coming out because I used a producer who turned out to be somewhat of a knucklehead And so I chose to scrap the material and work with new producers. Go to www.docofthedawn.com, and you can also purchase the new singles off of iTunes, Amazon MP3, or Rhapsody, capital D-O-C, period G. And, you know, there's a new album coming. The name is not etched in stone yet, but I can tell you the album will be produced entirely by Mr. Len. Look for a documentary and a possible reality show that will be us basically videotaping B's attempt at standing up, getting back on his feet again, and getting back in the business.
Oh, really? That's in the works.
Well, we're trying to put it together now. We're calling it Reality Used to Be a Friend of Mine, The Trials and Tribulations of PM Dawn.
That's awesome. Okay, cool.
Well, we're trying to put it together now. We got a couple of things, but right now it's in the early stages, and in all fairness, some of the things that I'm physically asking of my cousin to do with the physical therapist is kind of hurtful to him to have it recorded.
Right.
So I say let's get him out of these early stages right now and to where it's a little better for him, because there is an emotional sort of thing with this, and you know, we're not vultures and we never wanted to do the reality game, but now we see that, you know, there's so many horrible reality shows out there, and I said, you know what, if you could do something that could really help somebody, then maybe I could see doing it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I allowed myself to be talked into jumping on board with it, because I truly was not down for it, and I even said at first that, all right, you guys do it, you do it, but I'm going to stay off of it. But then people talked to me and explained what it was, and I said, okay, as long as people don't see us as a joke or something like that, then it's fine. But we don't want to do, we're not trying to do the surreal life or you know, the real Bliss Boys of New Jersey. You know what I mean? We're not trying to be stupid. Tell everybody I said to maintain the bliss, man, and always believe.
Absolutely.
No matter how hard it gets.